Welcome to Critical Issues Commentary, the radio ministry of Twin City Fellowship, a non-denominational Christian church located in Minneapolis, Minnesota, or you can find us on the web at cicministry.org or twincityfellowship.com. Today's program is part of a series of discussions between Brian Flynn and Bob DeWay on Bob's new book, Redefining Christianity. Let's listen.
And welcome to this week's edition of Critical Issues Commentary. I'm your host, Brian Flynn, and with me, as always, is Pastor Bob DeWay, author of Redefining Christianity, Understanding the Purpose-Driven Movement. This week, we're going to be talking about that the purpose-driven is actually a brand or a brand name. And I thought this was probably the most devastating critique of the purpose-driven life that I've read. Chapter 9 is very, very difficult to get through. If you're a purpose-driven pastor and you read this chapter, I think it's very difficult to deny the problems with that you pointed out in this chapter, because you are really saying and proving that the purpose-driven life is now a franchise. Explain what that means.
Okay. A franchise is simply a way in which an innovator who created a product, a process that creates a product that satisfies customers, okay, it takes a lot of talent to do that. It takes a lot of ingenuity. It takes money. It takes all kinds of things. But a franchise system is a way to transfer the ability to cash in on this brand identity to ordinary people that don't have the talent of the founder. And so what's the most famous franchise? Probably McDonald's.
Correct.
And everybody knows that wherever you are, if you're driving down the road in another state and you see the Golden Arches, if you go into that McDonald's, you know that when you order a Big Mac, it's going to be the same as if you went anywhere in the country to get it. Anywhere
exactly.
Else. It's going to be the same. And it's going to be the same as it was 20 years. Well, the first McDonald's I saw was in 62 when we moved. We took a trip up here with my dad to see a Twins game in the Dinkytown area in Minnesota by the University of Minnesota had a McDonald's. It was the first one I ever saw. But if you had a Big Mac in the 70s, it still tastes the same today.
Yep, they are consistent.
That's what brand is all about, and a franchise is a way to replicate that no matter who's running the restaurant, no matter who's running the show.
So in other words, I don't know much about hamburgers, I don't know much about secret sauces or how to make them, but even though I don't have those skills, I can buy a McDonald's franchise, and they're going to teach me everything I need to know. They're going to have essentially McDonald's in a box.
Right.
All the chapters, all the summaries, all the videos, everything I could possibly need to be instructed on how to recreate and duplicate another successful McDonald's franchise.
Right. And most of what you're just learning is how to manage people and manage a business, because all the product comes shipped in prepackaged.
Right.
So, and how to cook it is all done in such a way that you don't have to figure it out.
Right. And believe me, talk about consistency. You know, these people have done these things proven. They have a marketing program where they test the burgers, and if they come up with a new sauce, they extensively go through different trials and see if it's consistency, its taste. So in other words, you get that secret sauce. You don't make your own secret sauce, or you don't add to it or minus from it, because it's already been market tested.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do anything. You just keep with the program.
Exactly. So Rick Warren's genius is taking the whole idea of a franchise and creating a religious version of it that can be replicated around the world for church leaders.
That's really a great convenience, because if I'm your regular pastor, I've got knowledge of the gospel, but I don't know how to do some of the things that Rick Warren is teaching. I don't know much about marketing. I don't know how to reach into the community to make my church more acceptable to the unregenerate. Maybe I'm not the best speaker in the world, you know. Maybe I just don't have some of these skills that Rick does. But the convenience is I don't need to. I've got church in a box.
Yeah, he actually calls it that. Now, here's the real issue that gets to the heart of the matter. If you had an ordinary church before, as churches have been for decades and centuries, a church like what Christ designed a church to be, the type of person who's a pastor the skills or gifts, as we would say, that God would give him that he needs to have is he needs to be able to expound the Word of God, care for the needy people in the flock, the hurting and needy, and to make sure that the church is being faithful to Jesus Christ and his Word and what he has for the church, and to provide the means of grace, such things as communion, baptism, prayer, preaching of the Word. And that's what you need to do. But now, the new idea, the church growth idea, is that that sort of thing only appeals to people who are Christians, right? Your average person up and down the block isn't going to church because they don't care about communion. They don't care about being baptized. They certainly don't care about hearing the words of God because they're offensive to them. The narrow, exclusive claims of the gospel offend people.
Of course. I mean, if I go in there and I hear the clear gospel message and telling me that I need to repent of sin or that I am a sinner, well, you know, Bob, that's going to hurt my self-esteem.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to like that.
I'm not going to like that.
Okay, but the whole idea is that your church service has to appeal to these people out here. So now if you're an average pastor, this is an impossible task. How do I take something that if I preach it right out of the Bible, it's going to offend people? How do I change it so it appears I'm preaching out of the Bible, but I'm now coming up with a message that they love, even as they are? And most people can't do that, but Rick Warren can. He's the master. The other one that can do it is Robert Schuller before Warren. Schuller figured this out many years ago, and Rick Warren is able to do this. But what Warren's doing that Schuller didn't do is create this into a replicable package that the average pastor can do because they're not depending on their own talents. They're dependent on Rick Warren's talents.
Right. He's created a way to duplicate his success. I like what you write here in your book. You said, no one expected that such churches would be particularly attractive to non-Christians, in other words, a traditional church, because the church, by definition, was a gathering of the redeemed. So now we're taking a whole different market paradigm to change the church to facilitate and teach the redeemed, and now change the church to create the church for those that are unregenerated, for those that are not saved.
Right.
So we have changed the marketplace to helping people and instructing people that are saved, and now we're going to change the church completely. We're going to focus completely on the unsaved, but not in a means to save them, but in a means to entertain them and make them feel comfortable and come back week after week to enjoy our product.
Yes, and so in a simple sense, we have a different target audience. Okay, and if you're going to do some marketing, you need to have a target audience. And if the target audience is different, then you've got to go do your focus groups and you've got to do your market surveys and you've got to find out, okay, if I'm trying to sell a product, let's say, to teenage girls, well, then I'm going to go about it differently than if I'm trying to sell a product to retired ladies.
Correct.
Okay? It's a different demographic.
Yep.
And so these things are very scientifically figured out nowadays, and you'd be a very poor businessman if you didn't assess the market surveys and to understand who are you selling the product to, and how can you turn them into a satisfied customer? So in these terms, we have taken the church and its service as a product and determined that we had the wrong demographic.
Mm.
We found out that we're really not growing because we're trying to take care of Christians, and we're trying to feed the flock.
Oh, that's our mistake.
Exactly. And we're trying to preach a message that people don't want to hear, the wrath of God against sin, the blood atonement, repentance, all these things. These aren't appealing to potential religious consumers. So what this brand is designed to change the target audience to be whoever is out there in your community that might consider going to religious service. We talked about this in earlier broadcasts. But in this chapter 9, we're talking about how he actually accomplishes this. We're going to sort of reverse engineer this whole process that Rick Warren's created to show the nuts and bolts of how the whole thing works.
Well, you say here, now you use the word brand, but Rick Warren uses the word brand. He says here, to build health and balance within a local church by providing training, transferable products, and learning communities that leverage and extend the purpose-driven paradigm and brand to church leaders around the world. Yes. And then he goes on to say that you need to create a mission statement. Now, as I've shared before, you know, I'm in a marketing company. I understand the whole franchise and duplication business. I've been in it for a long time. You'll go to these self-help seminars and goal-setting seminars, and one of the first things they always tell you is you need a mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Covey's book talks about the number one thing is to create a mission statement.
Yeah.
But it just seems so odd to me to be reading these type of ideas in the context of building the church.
Well, that's the unique thing that he's brought, that this his new Reformation, is that we're going to take business marketing principles, consider the church and her message as a product to be sold. All right? Look at it that way. And then access all of the information out there from Peter Drucker and whoever the best people are. You mentioned Covey sold all those books. And take all of that, bring it into the church, and create a church that can have transferable products, leverage, brand identity, all these things that you're looking for in a secular company. And Warren has created a whole paradigm that's exactly that, and it's called purpose-driven. It isn't just a book. It's the whole process.
Right. Because people don't understand. Sometimes we're referring to the what's wrong with the purpose-driven life book? Well, we're not talking about the purpose-driven life book. We are talking about what you just stated. We're talking about how does that transfer to the church? Now, you talk about outcome-based religion, which is really, you know, again, here we are using terminology that comes out of marketing. And you say this, the key to a successful mission statement is that its goals must be measurable, so the statement must be stated in terms of results. Using his local church as a model, Warren states, it is stated in terms of results rather than in terms of activity. And then he goes on to say, as a mission statement, make it measurable, otherwise your purpose statement is just a public relations piece. That is absolutely true statement when you're talking about goal setting in a secular world. But this is just an odd thing to read when you're trying to build the church. All of these things are odd to me.
Well, that's what we're saying, is that he's redefined everything in order to make it fit this business model. So you have to have everything measurable, measurable results. And so what I do in my book is I go through each one of these little phrases in his own mission statement. And you can count on the fact that this mission statement is what they're doing, because Warren is the master of the mission statement. And the biggest blunder you could ever do in his world is have a mission statement that's not accurate to what you really want to do. So when Rick Warren says that his whole purpose is to extend the purpose-driven paradigm and brand to church leaders, you can count on that really is what he's doing. He wouldn't say that. You can't have a mission statement that isn't accurate. It would be the ultimate failure in their eyes. So I'm taking these terms because a lot of people don't understand the terms unless they're into business management, okay? And I'm unpacking them so that anybody that reads my book can understand, okay, what does it mean to use, what does leverage mean? What is a paradigm? What does it mean to create learning communities? What does it mean to have transferable products? All of that stuff I unpack and show how Rick Warren is doing that in his whole purpose-driven church model.
Well, you say, we'll talk about transferable products next. You say here on the purpose-driven website, it says over 300,000 church leaders in 22 languages have been directly trained, and there are now purpose-driven congregations in every country of the world. Well, you could say the same thing about McDonald's, is that there's been over so many different people having, you know, billions of hamburgers. And
yeah, they had in their signs. They used to have, when I was a kid, how many million they sold.
Yeah.
And then it was how many billions. And now they just say billions and billions. And
that's true.
It's immeasurable anymore because it's just so many hamburgers have been cooked.
Well, I suppose it would be accurate if you had a purpose-driven life church. You could have a sign out there. You know, you could say 100,000 served. Not saved, but served.
Yeah, really. These are the learning communities. Okay, now a learning community would be a group of people who have agreed to the basic protocol of the franchise, and agreed to the idea that they want to participate in this. And it would be like in your business world that you have a team on your business franchise, and you bring in an expert to put on a seminar to help all the team members bond, to get all the team members fired up about the product they're selling, and let's say instructed in the latest changes as far as protocol for the company. That's what they would do in the business world. Well, he's just doing that for the church.
Yeah, he gets the elders excited about it, and he gets the key people in the church, you know, maybe the longtime members that, mm-hmm. you know, would pretty much follow anything the pastor does, gets them kind of involved, gets the group leaders involved, and then everybody's on the same page to fulfill the corporate goals.
Right, the vision statement of the purpose-driven church. We're talking about these learning communities, and that's these 300,000 church leaders, but, you know, I have a question about that. I did my writing of this book during the year 2005. Actually, I started in November of 2004, completed writing in this November of 2005. It took 1 year. And I did a year's research before that. And I was researching the whole time I was writing. But what's interesting was I was writing this chapter 9 late in 2005, and his website said he had 300,000 church leaders trained. But when he spoke in September of that same year, at the Religion Newswriters Conference, there were 400,000. So where did those extra 100,000 come from? They must have just changed their who's counted. I mean, I don't know.
Or maybe they haven't really counted. It's kind of an estimate.
That could be.
Well, one of the things that I think is the attractive thing, and of course they have this idea, well, now they have to go and sell their idea. And they start out with this. He claims 20% more members and 20% more money are typical for those who participate in the purpose-driven campaign. So now he has to go out to the pastors of the world and essentially give them the pitch.
Yes.
Follow my franchise.
I've received the pitch. I've been getting mailings for 2 years. I'm a pastor and I'm on a mailing list. I don't know where they get these things, but I get the glossy brochures making these promises about how much your church is going to grow and how many small groups you're going to get and typical results. One of the things they do is they urge you, you have to follow the plan if you want the results.
Exactly.
And that's just how a franchise works. So he says here, learning communities, we said that's these groups in the church that they create. Then he says transferable products. Well, what's that? Well, on his website, there's 23 pages of products you can buy that'll keep everybody being purpose-driven in your church ad infinitum.
So you've got books, you've got DVDs, you've got training materials to keep everybody on the same page to go through the purpose-driven philosophy.
Right, but all of them have this purpose-driven registered trademark thing on. So every one of these products reinforces the brand identity.
Well, that is exactly what any marketing company would do, is that you have to reinforce the brand. What does the brand stand for? When you see McDonald's, when you see Burger King, when you see GM, when you see any company, mm-hmm. they have a specific symbol that they will always show to reinforce. And what does that symbol create for you? It means something.
Mm-hmm.
So if it can be reinforced and reinforced and reinforced that this is a successful model of church building, then the more people will trust anything that comes out of purpose-driven corporate headquarters.
Exactly. So that's the point of how you get a brand identity. Now, he talked about leveraging and extending the purpose-driven paradigm. Now, that's a term that you hear more and more, but 30 years ago, you hardly ever heard the term paradigm. It's been around.
Right.
Thomas Kuhn wrote this famous book, Structures of Scientific Revolutions, that really popularized the idea, and he wrote in the 60s, okay? But nevertheless, a paradigm is a model, it's a mental construct of reality. It's a model of how you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's like. And so they talk about having a paradigm shift. So in a sense that when a church becomes purpose-driven, it has a paradigm shift. And let me just quote what I said about that. This means adopting an entirely different model of reality. Or in this case, a system of beliefs about what the church is and what it does. The old paradigm is the view that the church is a gathering of the redeemed brought together by a work of God's grace. And we talked about that in chapter 1. the purpose-driven church is driven by the felt needs of unbelievers, or more appropriately in marketing terms, religious consumers. The new paradigm church is one that gathers the maximum numbers of religious consumers and meets their felt needs, thereby maximizing customer satisfaction, unquote. That's what I said in my book. That is what this paradigm shift is. You are shifting away from the biblical definition of the church to a market-oriented definition of the church. And that's a different view of reality. So when you go to church, or if you're a pastor and you're thinking about your ministry, if you adopt the purpose-driven paradigm, everything you believed has to change.
Correct.
And it has to go into a whole different model of reality. And this model of reality is everything I do has to have the goal of creating satisfied religious customers.
And preaching the gospel will not be one of those things.
No, that because that doesn't work, because that creates the narrow gate of Matthew 7. And it's offensive, as we said many times, it's offensive to the Jews and foolishness to the Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole Drucker, the whole total quality management, the Covey approach, all of this stuff that's integrated into this whole system is designed with one primary idea. And this has been revolutionary in American business, and it's this: satisfied customers. That is the goal of everything we do, is satisfied customers. Now, who's the customer for the purpose-driven church? Saddleback Sam. Or whoever that might be in your community. A reporter from a major newspaper has been interviewing me for an article about this, and she was asking me about that. She was saying, well, what do you think this is going to look like 50 years from now? Very good question.
Mm-hmm.
So I pondered it, and I said, it's impossible to know, because it's driven by the needs of religious consumers.
Right.
And so the market changes, the church will change with it. Just like in the business world, whoever finds a new market, for example, when Lee Iacocca invented the minivan, he saved the Chrysler Corporation.
Right.
Because he saw that there was a potential market for this vehicle that didn't exist, only in his mind. And he said, if we create this vehicle, we will satisfy these customers. Because there are a lot of people with a bunch of kids, and they can't get their stuff in the trunk of their car, and they don't like the stodgy old station wagon. Let's create something for this soccer family.
So prior to that, you might say, well, what are the cars of the future going to look like? Well, who knows? Because the needs of the market will change. Right now, we're in the midst of a change as far as gasoline being
exactly. What
powers the cars. 50 years from now, they might be all hydrogen, or who knows?
You don't know.
But that's a market. But what you're saying here is that look ahead to the future 50 years from now. If the purpose-driven life is intact in every church, what will a church look like?
You don't know.
No way of knowing.
There's no way of knowing, because it'll be dependent on the consumers in the community. So every time people's self-perceived needs change, the church has to change with it to keep up. And so rather than the church being something that's stable when everything else around us changes, the church is a change agent. The church is trying to be on the cutting edge of whatever change, and it can morph into whatever it needs to be depending on what happens in the future. So I told this reporter, if anybody knew that, it would be like in the business world. If you knew precisely what the market is going to be 20 years from now, you couldn't help but be very successful.
Right.
But that's not how the church is supposed to operate. What we have is a changeless truth that's relevant to all sinners in any culture, in any society, in any era of history, because we are all facing God's wrath against sin, and
right.
We need the blood atonement that Christ has provided, and we need the words of God. And God said, I, the Lord, change not. But this purpose-driven thing has to be adaptable to the changing world that it might be in, wherever that might be.
And if we were to follow the model of the Bible and Christ, you could predict safely what the church would be like 50 or 100 or 1,000 years from now.
It should be the same.
It should be the same.
Right.
But with PDL, it's not, because it's market-driven, not spirit-led.
Right. There's things that can legitimately change. I want people to understand what my position is here. Things that aren't dictated to us in the Bible can change. Okay? So church architecture, or whether you even have a building.
Correct.
That can change. whether we wear a suit and a tie and a hat when we go into church, or whether we come dressed with just a shirt and a tie, or whether whatever, these kind of things aren't dictated in the Bible. But this purpose-driven thing is about everything. It's about our message. It's a redefinition of everything. Even the supposed five purposes that he talks about are all redefined from what the Bible says.
So the message is really changing when you move from expository teaching to purpose-driven life.
Right. The message has to change because the message of the Bible will never create satisfied customers out there in the world, because they are loath to listen to authoritative teaching from God himself that says, "Thus saith the Lord, thou shalt not steal." They don't want to hear that. They don't want somebody to tell them what to do.
Nope. And if you go forward, well, here's what you said earlier, is that the purpose-driven life, and the way it goes, it defines what the church, also what it does not do. Any proposed activity that cannot be justified by the mission statement is rejected on that grounds. For Warren, a healthy church is a focused church. It is the church leader's job to narrow the focus, communicate the focus, create a structure that enables the church to implement the focus. You know, Warren quotes Drucker. This is what Drucker said. "So I always advise my friend Rick Warren, don't tell me what you're doing, Rick. Tell me what you've stopped doing."
Right.
Well, I've stopped preaching the gospel, and we've got a 20% increase, Peter.
Yeah, we stopped doing everything the church is supposed to have been doing the last 2,000 years. And so that's what this mission statement does, is to create a narrow focus so that you aren't going with what we call bunny trails. But in my opinion, the whole purpose-driven movement is one major bunny trail, because Christ has defined these things. So we were talking about transferable products. We talked about that. Learning communities. We talked about that. That's the people that went through this program. Leveraging the brand. How do you leverage? Have you thought about that? Do you ever hear that in your business, Brian?
Well,
what's that mean?
Well, it's essentially taking what's best about your company and exemplifying it and duplicating it, and therefore you'll have a greater market share.
Yeah, leveraging is where you try to find a tool that will multiply the effects of your effort. Okay, it's like if you got a wrench. Okay, your arm is just so strong, mm-hmm. and here's this bolt that you have to unloose. And if you have a little short wrench, you might not be able to get it loose.
Right.
But you get a great big long one, you're leveraging the amount of foot-pounds of torque that you can put on that bolt, and you can knock it loose.
Give me a large enough lever, and I can move the world.
Exactly. So how did he do that? How did he leverage? Well, I quote some emails in my book about that. I got an email from one person who was going to a church that had 10,000 members, and when this purpose-driven thing first came out, his pastor had already been through the training before there was even a book, The Purpose-Driven Life. And when the book first came out, the pastor had the church buy 10,000 of those, and everybody in the church had to go through that book.
Wow.
So that's a lever. You sell one pastor on your program, and you sell 10,000 books. That is a major lever. So the leverage, you get the key people and get them to sell it for you, and pretty soon you have a big impact, and that's how that thing became a bestseller right out of the box.
Sure. You know, what's interesting is I go through these terms, one thing it reminded me of is it's like I could almost see an infomercial for the purpose-driven life. You know how your late-night TV, kind of the announcer says, "Are you frustrated with today's church? Are all the other churches in the block getting bigger than yours? Are you just frustrated? Well, guess what we've got? We've got Church in a Box featuring purpose-driven life." Mm-hmm. And, of course, you go through this to the infomercial, and it says, you know, you can have tapes, you can have purpose-driven calendars, you can have Scripture Places Plus, the Purpose-Driven Life album, the Purpose-Driven Life video curriculum, and if you just follow this model, you'll be successful. And of course, they'll probably have the person that will give you the testimony. "Well, when I first started purpose-driven, you know, I already had 100 people, and now I've got 1,000. I just want to bless Jesus Christ."
Okay.
And it's essentially what that it is that they have created this church in a box, and you can get all these things. And if you order right now, Bob, they'll even throw in a Bible.
What do you know?
Yeah. Well, actually, probably Bible not included.
No, they'll send you the message.
They'll send you the message Bible.
Probably the one Richard Foster is working on with the mysticism in it.
Well, look at this. Here's another tool. The campaign includes the opportunity to downlink to Purpose-Driven Life simulcast via satellite. This is said about the downlink. Our surveys show that churches viewing the planned satellite broadcast usually experience greater momentum out of the event. Yep. And not only this, Bob. If you sign right now, you'll get pastors.com where you can download Rick's market-driven sermons each week. Now you don't have to go through the fuss and bother of creating your own sermon each week. Now you can just download Rick's market-driven, market-tested, paradigm-shifting sermons each week. Don't change a word, just like don't change the ketchup at McDonald's, because we've done our research and we know these things work for the unregenerate, of course.
Right. And that's the thing. And we're not exaggerating. This is the way it is.
Yeah.
Pastors.com he says that. He says, it says on their website, come here. And we've got 30 people on staff working on these sermons. They're proven. You can get the outline. You can download them. You can get everything you need. Save time. You know, what's happening? Well, the pastors aren't studying the Bible.
Well, for our listeners, we want to end this program sharing with them that we're going to continue in the same chapter because there's more ideas about this. I think what we've shared so far is that what Rick Warren has created is a market-driven, paradigm-shifting franchise in which anyone can duplicate. However, what we're going to talk about next week, what if there are people within the congregation that don't like the new corporate management, that would like to go back to gospel teaching or stay with gospel teaching? How do you deal with those resistors? We're going to talk about that next week. I'm your host, Brian Flynn.
And this is Bob DeWay.
Thank you for listening to Critical Issues Commentary. If you want to contact us, we're on the web at cicministry.org or twincityfellowship.com. For Critical Issues Commentary, this is Dick Cuffell. Be sure to tune in next week for the next program in this series.